This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Temps, and each week with an inspiring guest, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. So, here we go. Welcome back to Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I don't normally say the name of the show in the show, it's in the pre-recorded intro, but today we're doing it a bit differently. I wanted to say it because I'm proud of that title and I'm proud of the work we do, and because it's the 300th episode, and that is surreal, exciting, really hard to believe, you know, crazy, honestly. Whilst we're reclaiming words like mental, it's crazy to think that we've got this many episodes in, and it still means the world to host a show like this one. And I feel in this episode, in the one you will have heard last week, I feel more in my stride than ever with it. So thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. I'm going to do a slightly longer intro because, you know, I can. I've earned it. And I have some things to share. So first one that comes to mind, that I was recently named a one to watch in the podcast industry. Specifically a face to watch, which I find there to be some irony to in an audio medium. I'm like, is that a read? What do they mean by that? That I'm a face that should be seen, or I'm a face that it's good that I'm not? But whatever it means, essentially I'm somebody to look out for in the industry. You know, it's to recognize people that in their first 5 years of working in podcasting have done some big things. And this show not long ago passed its fifth year, its fifth birthday, and now we're here at 300 episodes. And you know, many of you I know listen to my other podcast, all about dating and relationships, or you've seen me speak in person, or you've heard me on other podcasts. Maybe that's how you found your way here. Whatever it is, it feels good to have got around and done some shit, particularly, you know, the mental health education campaigning, the anti-stigma work, even in addition to the podcast. I still really care about this stuff. Like, I'm so pumped. I'm so excited even to be like recording this. I was the other day sort of talking to myself / Milan, my cat, and thinking about what I'd say. And it is more a feeling than a thing I have. Good, a perfect phrase. It is an excitement at this milestone. And I've not always been someone that's the best at recognizing milestones. I've definitely been that person that with the endless workaholic to-do list of you cross it off and then you get on to the next thing. And that's the milestone. That's what you get. And I was, you know, literally talking to my flatmate today of like, I went from prioritizing actually stopping and pausing and taking a moment to celebrate achievements to now you can't stop me. Now I love to see something coming up on the horizon, and I love to like treat myself. And I, you know, it's been a big thing for me with food of like reminding myself there's a million reasons why we deserve to look after ourselves, to be nourished, to be looked after, to be minded by ourselves and by others. And where is this ramble going? And so, yeah, excitement is the general mood. And that was the general mood in this conversation. So the guest is one that I'm relieved to say feels like the perfect guest, because there was a certain amount of pressure of, okay, it's a big one. Who are we going to have on? Do we have a previous guest? Do we make a bit of a moment out of that? Do we, you know, sort of think about like, okay, who's on the list of people that I've not got to interview yet, but would like to? And in all the umming and ahhing about that, the answer really came to us in what feels like the most appropriate way. I followed Katie Turner's music, really connected to it, her lyricism, the way she's so open and upfront about mental health, irrespective of whether she's doing good or doing bad, that openness is always there. And, you know, she's someone I think is great. I'm a, you know, happy fan of. And then through the joy that is podcasting, through what we've built here over the last 5 years, I get loads of wonderful pictures from all over the world. a lot from the States, as you might imagine. Podcasting is very well developed over there. It's not a coincidence I get to interview a lot of Americans. But this was such an example where someone who is a wonderful guest for us and a wonderful, you know, exciting person for me to have the opportunity to chat to came through on a pitch email. Just the right time. And it reminds me of all the people I've got to connect to over the years with this show, all the really meaningful conversations that I look back on all the time and that have been a part of shaping who I am today. I know the show is not for me, but it never was made for me. And yet I've got to experience it really changing my life. It's a big thing to say out loud. And I appreciate you tuning in, listening, particularly now I host it on my own and you hear me talk directly to the mic in an empty room. And, you know, it means the world to get to do this work, make the difference that I know it makes, hear from people, yeah, all around the world that want to be a part of it, but also people that listen and, you know, appreciate the conversations and take them away in their own lives like I do. And find so much benefit from that. It's mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing. It's so exciting. I'm trying to somewhat do podcaster voice and not just start squeaking with excitement. But try and make it somewhat tolerable, acceptable on the ears. That's what I mean. And so that's the story of today's guest. We get into the theme of music. Something that's been such a tool for me and unlocking emotions, figuring out a lot of who I am, what my mental health is, what do I do about it in many ways. And I had a lot in common with the guest. And so we have a conversation where we jump around and we relate a lot and we share stories. And it feels a bit like a weight off to get here, to have this milestone and to be like, okay, that interview is in the bag. And it is all the things that I wanted, all the things I didn't even know I wanted. So yeah, such a lovely, genuine conversation. And so what else do I have to share 300 in? Well, We're gonna keep working. The show's gonna keep continuing. Me and Pete are working on a few things behind the scenes in terms of fine tuning, as you know, as we try and constantly do. But I have some plans. I'm gonna upgrade a bit of my tech potentially on my dating podcast. Invest in a soundboard as part of that, so sound effects might come back in a way that's like more organic and fluid within the episodes. You know, just add some fun there. We're planning to revamp that show a bit in terms of the breadth of guests. So not just focusing as much on comedians, but having people from a whole range of dating perspectives, including a lot more people in professions relating to dating and relationships. So that's going to be a lot of fun. This show, we're going to continue what we're doing, but I'm really focusing actually, and this is a mental health thing, now that I say it, on, you know, on streamlining what we do. We're this many episodes in, there's no reason we can't just be efficient more at times. And so there's already certain things that we've created programming for to make more slick in the editing, like truncating silences, if you want to Google that, was something that I did a lot of that manually, which is a bit ridiculous. And there's a lot of hours that go into editing with this show. Every episode, including my work, Pete's work, researching the guests, scheduling, and obviously the recording itself, it is about 10 hours per episode, or at least it has been. And so there are ways that without decreasing the quality, see, now I am indulging in the option of a longer ramble. All of that to say this, we're going to keep doing what we're doing. We're going to tune some things, but we're still going to be here doing the thing. I think I will again take December off. I feel that's a healthy thing to be doing. But we'll be re-releasing like key episodes during that or playing around with some other more experimental things each December. And so yeah, the show is going to be here. So I guess thank you for listening. Look out for more. Loads of cool things are on the way. Loads of incredible guests. We're really pushing a routine now of recording way more in advance. So that gives me more options to kind of move episodes around and sort of, you know, kind of tweak things and really kind of keep the themes like very different week to week. Now I'm rambling again. This is definitely enough. Yeah, the upshot is thank you so much. And thank you for listening, but thank you for looking out for yourselves. And this investment of engaging with content like this and prioritizing your mental health by doing so. That's the fucking takeaway. That and 300 episodes, and I still don't know how to have a conversation without swearing. They're the two things we've learned. Oh, and thank you, those of you that came to see my talk at the podcast show in London, because that will have happened by the time you hear this episode. So a million thanks, and, you know, thanks to Pete, my wonderful producer, for being one of the most consistent people in my entire life, and certainly in my professional podcasting career. I could not have done it all without you. So yeah, thanks to Pete, thanks to you, and I guess thanks to me too. Now, let's get into this episode with Katie Turner. But first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out.
Hi, my name is Katie Turner. I am a musician, and that is something cool about me. And something also really cool about me is I have had experiences with my mental health since very young, and it's kind of been a long-lasting theme throughout my life that now I get to explore through music. So that is why I'm here today, and I'm very happy.
I love that. No, I'm also very excited. Yeah, I told you off air, we're 300 episodes in, so it's a special conversation. I'm glad to be chatting to you. And I love that you started off with saying, here are two cool things about me. You're so embracing of mental health conversations now. You're like, oh no, I'm past the stigma.
I think it's that thing where I'm so past judging myself on that end, because my brain was like, girl, we can't. It's just not sustainable to judge yourself on like, everything. So you have to pick a battle. So I'm like, all right, I'll stop judging myself for that, and I'll work with it and embrace it. And I'll still judge myself though for how I come across in a 5-second conversation with a stranger. And that's just
you choose your battles, right? And so let's go back, if you're up for it, and talk a bit about kind of where things started off for you. So was mental health a conversation growing up? Was it something you had any concept of?
I've been in therapy since I was 7, but it wasn't a conversation really in the household or anything. Love my parents. Very great people. It was almost though, they're from the generation of tough love. And very quickly I've learned tough love does not work on me. So it kind of was this inner battle of knowing I was different from other children, but on paper, it was really hard to mind map it out, because I'm like, my parents are still together. I'm financially stable. I like going down a list of things you would think that, okay, why do I feel the way I feel? And I very quickly, like, you know, as you get older, you learn that it has nothing to do with how your brain just decides to work and the stories it decides to tell you. But it was something that kind of was not shamed, but there was a stigma around it. And it was like, you have no reason to be upset. So it kind of was something I've battled with, and I just kind of kept to myself, and I found other ways to have an outlet. And before it was music, it was books and Tumblr.com, which we all can maybe wonder, did that do damage? But yeah, that's kind of my early experiences with it all.
Yeah. And that's so real what you shared there, that we can go through this list of what have I got to be feeling this way about? And, you know, on top of that, you've got the kind of crowdsourced stigma. This doesn't happen to people like me. When the conversations aren't had, not only do we judge ourselves when we're struggling, but we don't believe that our genuine, real experiences are real, are genuine, are valid. And so there must be something wrong with us.
Yeah.
And what was that like then, going to therapy at a young age and having all this kind of stuff soaked up and swirling around and trying to make sense of, actually, I could do with some support and letting someone in?
Well, we're honest. Oh my God, it's the 300th episode, so we're very candid here. It wasn't both form of therapy, so it kind of was like still an invalidating feeling of like, oh, like, you know, therapists are like, you need to source them out like a partner. So it was kind of that thing of, you're not with the right therapist, and they're kind of doing the same thing of like, what do you have to be upset about? You're just being dramatic. And I'm like, ah. So even though I was technically getting help on paper, it took years to even let people in. So it kind of was a very isolating transformative experience because I kept a lot of this weight on my shoulders and invalidated myself a lot and did genuinely think it was something just wrong with me as a person. So it was very lonely for the first couple years of being conscious in this brain, this old dome. But when I finally started to, it's still something I'm learning, but like took the first steps to start letting people in and validate my experience. It is just such a freeing moment of just having someone say, oh yeah, no, you have all the right to be upset with that thing. And I'm sorry that happened. You're just like, whoa, what? They're like, I'm not built different. Like, I'm just like, it's like being built different, but in like the wrong way. It's like, oh my God, I'm not crazy. It's like you're gaslighting yourself for so long that when someone you let in says you're not insane, you just feel so hurt.
Yeah. No, I relate to that a lot, that you can find yourself feeling defective. And in fact, what you are is distinct. You know, we all have our own distinct brain chemistry, our own distinct personalities, sets of experiences that make us us. And that is therapy at its best, is someone who's a neutral stranger that we get to know and we get to feel safe around, who reminds us we're not wrong.
That's such a great quote, what you just said.
I'm too many episodes in. I can't help it now.
I want to write that down. I'm like, that's good. You should do this.
And, you know, actually, I can throw a quote back at you in return because you're such a wonderful lyricist. And one that I wrote down was, you have a track called Gets Better. And in it, one of the lines that really stuck out to me was, they say it gets better. Damn, it's taking forever. You want to speak to that experience of getting older and starting to get support that was matched for you, but it's not a quick fix.
I remember, well, thanks for bringing back that deep cut. It makes me, and thank you for all your compliments. It makes me so love. I wrote that song when 2019, I feel like something collectively was in the air that year. Just, I don't know if it was the same for you, but just some fuckery was happening in that year. My mental health took such a decline. It was the worst I've ever been. And I remember writing that song because, you know, you see all these like quotes and these positive things of like, stay, because it'll get better. And oh my God, like, just keep holding on. And have the weird balance of logic, but being in it, of knowing like that may be true, but I don't know the end. Like, I cannot see the end. And it's just, when everyone says like it gets better, it's like, can someone give me a date? Because not sustainable. Like, I can't do this. And then I think the beautiful thing about that song is now I can look back and be like, okay, like it did get better, but it's when you're so deep in it and you feel like there's no way out. You're just like, what the hell is everyone talking about? Like, what is this? How do I get there? Hello? But it is really cool to write songs from such dark places where I felt like there was no hope. And then years later, be like, oh my God, now there was. Oh, that's so crazy.
Yeah. And know that you, in many ways, gave that hope to other people. And I want to ask you, you know, having been so known for being open about mental health and getting asked about it a lot, have you noticed that's changed over the years in terms of like appropriateness of questions, kind of stupid things people might say in interviews? Do you see that firsthand, that people are getting better at these conversations generally?
I feel like I'm very blessed to have had in like, at least in interviews or like film segments or anything, people have mostly been like understanding, and it's always been very much like a place where I feel supported because luckily people have come with their research or at least they've been open to understanding in these kind of scenarios. So that's always been a nice place to express myself. I think it's always like, you know, like the little comments of things that aren't recorded or things that, you know, the people, if you're just in like a normal conversation with somebody and it comes up, it's just like, I have ADHD too. I can't for the life of me like stop scrolling YouTube shorts. And it's like, that's not what it is. Like, that's like, but maybe it's the people I surround myself with. Maybe it's just my own understanding of, you know, understanding that a lot of people don't mean it maliciously. And so I've been very blessed in that I've surrounded myself by a lot of people who either have struggle with mental health, have ADHD, are on the spectrum or are just willing to understand. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, I get that. And it sounds like you have such a great team around you now. Has there ever been times, you know, I'm wondering, particularly with the reality TV days, where you did feel pressure of like, don't talk about certain things, you know, or you can talk about this experience of mental health, but not this one?
100%. I mean, one of the things they do to get you before you are allowed to be on the show, and this is public knowledge, is you have to talk to a lawyer or a therapist, and they have to deem you mentally fit enough to like go on and the competition. So I was that thing of like, I'm brutally honest. And that was one thing I had to learn, that sometimes there are things that you can keep to yourself. That was definitely things where it was like, okay, my mental health could be a liability. It could be something that cost me the competition. Oh, shit. So it was kind of navigating acceptable. And that's actually been a theme in different ways, but also, but mostly primarily to American Idol, like acceptable mental health. And I feel like as a society, we're just starting to understand like depression and anxiety, but it's like certain elements of them. I definitely learned that there were more acceptable parts of mental illness you can talk about and less acceptable ones that you have to kind of hide.
I know. Yeah. And that feels like the next 300 episodes is like bringing more of that out of the shadows, because I'm tired of it. We talk about all kinds of mental health here, and it's very possible to do so. It's very possible to treat conditions similarly. And, you know, I want to ask you about this honesty that you have with your writing, with how you talk about your mental health, because there still can so often be this thing that people in the public eye are encouraged to talk about mental ill health in hindsight. And you've never done that, seemingly, because you really got catapulted into fame via American Idol and then a whole series of ways in which your artistry was featured. And, you know, like many people, I came across your work via a particular YouTube documentary. I'm really connected to the honesty in what you write and how you speak about your mental health. Did that feel like a choice, or was that the way you were always drawn to be with your audience?
I think definitely it started out as a way of, I'm a person who sometimes, it's really easy for me to like talk about things and feelings instead of feeling them.
Mm-hmm.
And then how I would be able to feel them is through the music. And that kind of became like my place to be vulnerable and be the most authentic part of myself. And it's really easy for me to talk about my brain from a detached point of view, but also it did become a way to let people in, because throughout the years it was so lonely. And it selfishly began as a way of like to have other people enter my brain. But then I also saw like the mutual benefit and like the exchange of like, it can help other people feel like less alone and feel more supported. And I think that was one of the first opportunities and times I've seen mental health kind of be like a exchange of just two people being able to talk about it and exist in that space. And that was a very cool realization that the songs I write and the honesty that I show, it actually can be for other people as much as it is for me. And that was really, I think, tantamount in breaking down my fear of vulnerability.
Yeah, no, I definitely see that. It's such a incredible healing conversation talking about mental health. And yet, you know, with stigma, we are encouraged to shy away from it. We have a learned fear so often of being this open and this vulnerable, but it is ultimately what connects us. You know, I often walk away from interviews like these and I feel I, you know somebody so well in a way that I don't know how else. We could talk about the weather all day long. I don't think I'd have an idea of who you are as a person. And that's, you know, I think that's what I care about. And I think that's how we really connect. I actually have another quote for you. Can you tell that preparation for this interview was a lot of looking at quotes and thinking about music? I'm obsessed with Fran Lebowitz, if you know her, a writer and humorist. And she did a Netflix series with Martin Scorsese, which essentially was about her and her perspective. And one of my favorite things that she said in that, which you've reminded me of, was no one is loved like musicians, because they give people the ability to express their emotions and their memories.
Holy shit. Damn.
Right? Was that very organic of like, this is an outlet for me?
Yeah, because I was chronically online as a teenager. How I even got introduced to music, it's like that funny thing where it's someone's like, you should meet this person. And you're like, yeah, yeah, whatever. And then they end up changing your whole life. I feel like that was my introduction to music, because how it started for me was I wanted to be an X Factor, to be like made into like a One Direction or a Fifth Harmony. And I was like, I need to get talent. I need to get a talent. I need to learn an instrument and I need to get talent, because I have this fucking dream of being in a X Factor Simon Cowell girl group. And then I'm glad I had that delusion, because it got me to practicing. And then I very quickly realized like, oh, cool. Like I can write songs. So the first song I wrote, well, the second song, the first one was God Awful and we don't talk about it. The second song I wrote, because 21st Century Machine, it was just amazing how like the simplest things could like inspire a song, where a guy from my high school was like, you should smoke weed. And I was like, no, God, why is everyone so obsessed with smoking weed? I'm just so, what? And I wrote about it. And then I used that for American Idol to audition. And it was just a really cool outlet of like, I could just take the most basic things and feelings and put them into songs. And it grew into like, I can write my most complex feelings and simplify them and break them down like a mind map and then put them into songs. I am a person where I'm not the best vocal communicator, like just speaking. I stutter, my ADHD, I lose myself a lot, and I will make a joke out of any of my feelings at any given time. I'm the person where if I feel like crap and someone's like, do you want to talk about it? I'll joke and I'll make a joke out of it. And I'm like, I'm so fine, because I want to be easy. I want to be like the cool girl. So then music became my way of being like, I'm actually like, this is actually how I'm really feeling, but I'm too scared to tell you, but I can sing it for you. And I hope this gives you a better understanding of who I am. It became very freeing, and it really did become my way of communicating. And it's still now to this day, the form of communication I feel the strongest in and the most comfortable, because if, again, in the heat of a moment of a conversation, if somebody hurts me, I'm going to be like, well, I don't want to ruin their day and I don't want to burden them. I don't want to like make them feel bad for hurting me. Womp womp. So I can put it in a song, and then it's way easier for me to be like, this is actually how you made me feel. Here it is. And for that, I'm like forever grateful.
Yeah. No, that's beautiful. I'm so glad that you found that. You know, it reminds me of something I've never really talked about, which is, you know, there is a bit of a reason why I like being this side of the interview. That not only is speaking, you know, my equivalent medium that I feel more comfortable, and partly that's to do with dyslexia, where writing things down is very draining and I can't spell for shit. And the fact that everything autocorrects, I will probably never learn how to spell words that I actually use all the time. There is a further reason why I like to be this side of the interview. It's probably also to do with dyslexia, of like, it can take me a bit longer to get to these quotable lines, you know, to formulate my thoughts in a linear way, to get them out, to make sense to other people. And when I'm in a medium like this, where I do less of the talking, that gives me more time to do that. More time to kind of figure out my perspective and, I guess, by extension, who I am. And it sounds like you get to do that with the music. You get to put it down and be like, this is the honest, raw feelings. Okay, now that it's out, now that I've got the outlet, how do I tweak it? How do I find the best possible words? And through that process, people like me then get to listen to the music and be like, that is spot on. I don't know if I would have ever thought of phrasing it like that, but that's songwriting. That's, you know, you putting in the practice and working at your craft, right?
Also, it's really cool to hear you say it, but just from a different perspective of like your dyslexia. It's like so cool that brains can be similar but different in ways. So we just have different ways to just catch on to our thoughts and to
find something to do with them.
Yeah. Even like right now, I'm like, but the difference is with me, it's that my mouth decides to speak before my brain even has the thought, so that I make it up as I go. And I'm like,
you're playing catch up.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah, no, I get that. And tell me then how it's been figuring out diagnoses, and then also, you know, how that relates to ADHD and those kind of intersectionalities.
It's been a long road to get diagnosed with anything because I've known since very young, it was like depression, anxiety. Then at 19, when that was the worst year of my life, they start throwing everything at you, you know? So for a while, I was like, you could be borderline or something. And it was this whole year of a bunch of things trying to get a word for what I was feeling. And then eventually I got to ADHD and being on the spectrum. And it was honestly one of the biggest, most life-changing things that happened to me to date, because just having a word that you could be like, oh my God, this is it. Yes. Like, this is a word that I've been looking for so long. And you just feel how earlier I said of like just not gaslighting yourself. It was this, it just, everything started to make sense. So then getting the proper medication, working on the tools in my toolkit have been incredible. But also where I am now is just accepting that my brain is my brain and I can't life hack my way out of it. I can't. Because for a while, in the acceptance of all this, I was like, okay, so I'm neurodivergent. Cool. So I want to be perfect. I want to be perfect. So structure. Cool. I'm going to try and do this and I'm going to take this supplement because apparently that's good for that. And I'm going to do that. And then I'm going to journal. And then obviously when you can't keep that up and you get burnout and you get overwhelmed, you can only do that so many times before you're just like, this is just who I am. And I'll always be this way. So I guess that was freeing. And where I currently am at right now is just like accepting who I am, not necessarily most days loving that that's a fact, but accepting it and accepting that I can't hate myself into being able to process things like a neurotypical person. And I cannot like berate myself into not getting overstimulated. It is me. And for so long, I definitely tried to operate under that change thing of I'll just force myself to bend my schedule around other people. And now I've just a team around me that really understands. It's been really like a weight has been lifted off my shoulders of getting to be myself and having people who work with me and not against it, like, and don't see it as like something that makes me less than. They just see it as something that makes me me, and they work with it. And that's been crucial. So it's been a long road to get here, but I am, you know, practicing self-neutrality and kindness, a lot more kindness, and just showing up as myself.
I love that. And share with me more about this idea of self-neutrality. What's that been like to find?
It's discovering this unknown gray area that I've struggled with finding for a long time of not bouncing from one end and one extreme to another and either going from I'm awesome to I suck and I'm defective. Self-neutrality has just been me being like, okay, is this something I really can fix or is this just me? And just kind of breaking down my frustrations and then seeing like where that stems from. And if I'm judging myself based on the perception of other people, and if I'm just trying to fit into what they think I should be doing, and if I actually care. Of like the other day, I was at an industry event and I was really overstimulated. And at these things, people come up to you, they don't really see, and they want to talk and just the networking. And I had a panic attack outside and I really was beating myself up about that. Like, but self-neutrality is more just working through it for me right now. It's working through it and going, do I just feel like I should be able to do that? Because I'm just judging myself based on other people and what I see them do. Or like, is that something I genuinely want to work on? Because we can, if it's something I want for myself. And most times I find that where these I should statements come from are just sneaky ways to beat myself up and try and be someone I'm not. So it's kind of just been a lot of just at least 10-second pauses before I react or letting myself react. And then just...
And that also being fine.
Yeah, and that just being fine. I think that's the thing of understanding that I'm not a problem that needs to be fixed all the time. I'm just fine. And that's great.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of my favorite like Gen Z-isms is this overuse of the word vibe. And I've fully embraced it and taken it as my own of like, that's what I want to do. You know, if I have a day off, I want a vibe. I want to just exist. And, you know, I guess my parallel here is like body neutrality. That's been really transformational for me of, in many ways, I've done a lot of the work, not hating my body and overcoming a certain amount of eating disorder stuff. But within that, I think we've also got to like figure out, okay, what is it we eat aiming for? Because that's totally valid to be different. And so for me, as much as I'm aiming to not hate my body, I don't necessarily think it's possible for me, or maybe even aspirational, to love everything. And so actually, a lot of the time, it's finding that neutral space of I just am. And if anything, I can lean into just my body is useful, my body has its quirks, and my body is fine, rather than I have to think it's the best and I have no qualms and no complaints, because I don't know if that's for me.
I mean, like you said, it's just a vibe. You're just a vibe.
Just vibing.
I think that's always been something I've struggled with the other end of the extreme, from going from like self-loathing to like pure ease with self-love. I think most times it is way easier to achieve self-neutrality of just accepting that you have a body and it does have quirks. I'm a perfectionist sometimes when I aimed for like pure like the affirmations and like the self-love, and I'm like, I'm so sexy and hot and beautiful, and I'd look in the mirror and I wouldn't feel that way. I'd go, hell, I'm failing self-love. Oh shit, oh my god, I'm broken and it will never work for me. And then I would just go back down the scale.
Yeah, no, this is it. Because when we see the like perfectionist approach to this, and often that is kind of backed up by all the stuff we scroll through of on social media of self-love being treated as a thing that you buy and a thing that you have the perfect clean home and perfect selfie for, like it becomes such a visual and external thing and a thing tied to money. And that's not what it is at all. And in fact, I would go the opposite way and think that any self-love you're doing is winning. You know, anything you can find good about yourself, any bit of self-care you can do, it's all like trying to go up from zero and look after yourself the best you can, versus there being a perfect you, a perfect way to look after you. What would that even be?
I think you said it best. You're just coming in with facts. You're very healing present.
Oh, thank you.
You come in with facts of, I think it has become so capitalistic almost, of you need to buy this gratitude journal and you need this and you need these workout clothes and like you're just gonna take your hot girl walks and everything.
And it can be the $2 journal. You gotta have the $35 one that has your whole year planned out for every night you need to write what you're grateful for. And it feels expensive and it feels kind of oppressive, because then I'm going to miss a day and then I failed. The whole year's a write-off.
God, it's like mental health conversations are the best way to connect with people. I'll stand by that, because every time you speak, I'm just like, oh my God, yes, you get it. Like my brain, I'm like, it's like you're in here.
I've had a lot of practice. And tell me this, in terms of understanding your brain, what's it been like, you know, that difficult process of figuring out, okay, what is neurodivergence? What is my personality? What is mental illness? And how are all these things fitting into who I am?
I think it's still something I'm figuring out to this day, of wondering, what is just my personality? What is neurodivergence? What's a mix of both? What influences my personality? And finding all those like lines. And so to be honest, sometimes a lot of the times I still don't know. Do I not want to get up out of bed in the morning because I am depressed, or am I depressed because I'm thinking all the things I have to do and it's causing me executive dysfunction and now I am depressed because now I don't want to, and they all playing tag with each other sometimes. So definitely, I don't know if I'll ever know which voice is definitely speaking, but I'm just trying to coexist and accept that. I mean, the other day, I don't know where everything stems from, but I said to myself in the mirror, I think it was like the nicest compliment I've ever given myself. I'm like, I'm certainly not boring. So there was something where I was thinking about, in a love situation, I was getting down on myself of, oh my God, am I those thoughts of, six, I'm not good enough is something because my brain is, am I the problem? Oh my God. And then I got to step back and I'm like, well, yeah, they can't say I'm boring. Like I'm always that whimsy. How I sum it up now is my one word is whimsy. It's either whimsy or camp. And that's just where that's where I'm at right now. Those are my two words. And I'm like, yeah, it's just whimsy. I'm whimsical and I'm not boring. So I definitely have just been making peace with the fact that it is given me a lot of hardships, but it's definitely given me a lot of beautiful quirks. So no, I'm grateful for
I agree. Religion. I get that. And before we start to wrap up, let's circle back again to, you know, to music, that it's helped you figure out a way, a strategy really for how to express yourself, how to figure out these complicated emotions that are like buzzing around in your brain and somehow getting them out on paper. Can be an outlet and can be a way to look back at them and be like, huh, there is actually some order and some logic to the chaos going on inside here. What's that like now that you're working on new music, new projects, and that's such a big part of your routine? Is it still as much of an outlet?
100%. I think it's something that for a while it got a little blurry because I started placing those self-doubt thoughts onto my music. Which that sucks. Once your coping mechanism, you start judging that when it used to be your form of speak. But I became too aware of the fact that like, oh my God, marketing this and TikTok and oh my God, it will come out. And oh my God, I don't want to hurt people's feelings. And oh my God, For a while, it kind of got a little messy again. But it's like when therapists are like, go for a walk and you're like, no. And then you do. And you're like, wait a second, this is nice. That's where I'm at with music, where it's not necessarily the first thing I do anymore when I'm really stressed out.
Sorry, I have to pause that. That's one of the most relatable things I've ever heard you say, of like being told to go for a walk and be like, no. And then you go for the walk and you're like, oh, actually, maybe they were right. Maybe the walk is good.
It makes me mad. And it's the same thing where I pick up a guitar and I actually just start playing music or listening to music. I'm like, wait, that's good. Maybe that's why it was my coping mechanism. Or when I'm sad and I decide to maybe put on like an upbeat song instead of the most devastating goddamn song you ever heard. And I'll be like, I want to dance. They are right. Oh, this is hack. I found the hack. But like music, well, I think even if sometimes it is like a relationship, and sometimes when if I step away a little bit, I'll always find my way back to it. And even this last week, I found that love again of just like, holy shit, this is why I do that. And I just had this like creative burst. And I just started writing every niche feeling ever. I was like, it always is so fun. And it always just makes me feel a little less insane and a little more balanced. So yeah, it still is my outlet.
Yeah, that's great. That's great to hear. And I'll admit something to you. I had only last week a reminder of how much music still, you know, is intertwined with my emotions, where I found myself thinking about a particular ex who I hadn't thought about for a while and like was just really in my feelings very unexpectedly. Like I literally ended up calling a friend and being like, I don't know where this has come from, but you know all about this person, so let's just talk about it. And, you know, I very much made the situation worse, because what did I do when I thought about this person? Well, I started listening to breakup music, because back when things ended, that was helpful because it was a catalyst. I'm feeling these things. There's a lot of feelings. I don't have words for them. But often I can find songs that I really relate to and they have the words that I'm lacking. And they have the space for me to like lean into these feelings and embrace them in a way that for a long time in my younger life, I was no good at doing. I was running from feeling feelings. It's both something I find incredibly helpful, but in this situation, it backfired, because listening to breakup music when you are years past the breakup actually, for me anyway, took me backwards. And then I was even more upset. And I was like, okay, now I need to chat to this friend and be distracted by someone else's voice for a little bit. So yeah, there's an anecdote. I guess the moral of the story is...
Don't listen to breakup music when You're thinking about your ex.
Don't take for granted how much music moves us, because it took me a long, long time to have what actually ended up being a breakthrough for me of realizing, oh, there's a reason why I shy away from silence at times. Why I like music, because music helps me emotionally regulate. That was one of the coping mechanisms I found. And it did start off with compartmentalization of like classic man shit of like, I'm going to feel it, this thing that I'm trying not to feel for the duration of this song. And then the song will be over and I will put it away again. I will put the feeling back down, hidden where it belongs. And, you know, whilst that didn't start off the healthiest, it was the sparks to learning to actually connect with my emotions, you know, things that I didn't know how to name, things I didn't know how to feel through other people's art. You know, I got to sort of dip my toe in there. And, you know, and now it's something that I embrace all the time. And now I'm feeling happy and I want to listen to happy music and lean in. But, you know, we can't take for granted. It can still backfire. Let's not play with fire on this stuff.
What's your favorite happy song? What's like the one song that you can go to and you're like, damn, that it always puts you in a good mood? Like, what is that for you?
See, I feel like I'm even more specific than that now, where it's like music helps me understand emotions even more finite. So now it's like kind of happy, like empowered music. So I have music I used to like listen to when I was like in modeling and I was trying to like psych myself up. And so that's kind of that stuff. And I have music that reminds me of like friends or certain holidays, and that's kind of happy for different reasons. Yeah. So I don't think there is one song. It often changes. And sometimes there's a catharsis in just even the stuff that's not the obvious choice. You know, like if we take one of your songs, Home is one that I can listen to that. And it reminds me of that experience of seeking your home. What is that to you? Is that other people? Is that a particular place? What is it? But I could listen to that song when I'm sad and it'd be like, shit, I feel lost. Or I can listen to it when I'm happy and be like, oh, I do feel at home in Dublin with the friends that I have, with the cat that's asleep in the room, ignoring me.
There
you go. So we know you're a good person because you have a cat. That's how it works. And yeah, there's a little bit of a ramble, but I think we're on the same page with this stuff. Music means the world.
Hey, and I love a ramble. I mean, that's literally, again, that's my entire career, just rambling. That was beautiful.
And you're doing great with it. So as we start to wrap up then, you know, it's a music episode. Tell us about new music on the way.
Well, I'm releasing 2 EPs this year.
Busy.
Comedy and Tragedy Act 1, Comedy and Tragedy Act 2. Basically, it kind of sums me up as a person where I'm very confused with myself because I don't know how I can just have this like very much like a personality and then go home and write the most devastating music. And then I feel like I just wanted to let people in more on my brain, how I cope with comedy. And it's going to tackle some feelings that are not really fun. And then it's going to tackle some things that are a little more upbeat. That's just where we're at. And that's the new music on the way. But yeah, it's been a long road to get here, but really excited.
I'm excited for you. This is great. I can't wait to hear more of the music. And thank you. Thank you for being here. The 300th episode.
That's 300. I'm holding up. I don't have other hands. But imagine if I did it with hands, I would be saying 300.
Any final thoughts you want to share with our listeners? And then we'll do the bit behind the paywall and we can gush about music even more.
Yes. I will say, hey, you're doing great. And there is no real normal. So you're your own version of normal. So just embrace that and fuck what anyone else thinks and stop chasing a universal normal because that does not exist and you are fine. Keep it up.
That's very me. That combination of love and anarchy. Like, you're doing great. Love everyone. Kumbaya, but also fuck anyone else that tries to bring you down.
Literally. Fuck them. You're great.
Great. I feel like I need to add my catchphrase everyone knows me for, which is, you are enough. I mean that. I say that at the end of every episode. It's a reminder to me as much as it's a reminder to the listeners. So yeah, that's it. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.